We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
What up? What? We didn't play the music. Hold on, wait.
Miami. It feels like Miami.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Heatbeat Podcast. I'm your host, Carlo Navas, and with me today, on the bottom of the screen here on Twitch, you can find our Twitch page at twitch.tv/MIAHeatbeat. If you are a podcast-only listener, come on, join. All our podcasts are live, and we're having a ton of fun here on Twitch. So joining me today on the bottom of the screen is our trash tweeter, Jack Alfonso.
What's up?
On the left of me, we have our 2K coach, Frankie.
What a do, baby.
And on the bottom left, the Moose himself, Alex Moosey-Bye.
What's going on, people? How we doing today?
It's good, because we actually get a damn show after a Heat win, and that's not very often, right? Like, we don't get this often, right? And Jimmy Butler's back, and this season has been a bit of a slog. And Alex in chat is pointing out that Jack has a cheesy sports writer jacket.
Yeah.
Also, chat's asking if our intro song is on Spotify. Our intro song is not on Spotify. That is an exclusive that you only get when you listen to the podcast.
Supposed to show that Alex doesn't watch the pregame show because Jack is.
Yeah, that's really fucked up. Actually, yeah.
No, I watch. Well, first of all, I'm driving home.
Alex. Trust me, baby.
I think Moose just Miami revealed that he too doesn't.
Miami Heat the league in Alex's.
Yeah, we have a lot of
podcasts has more Alex's.
No, we have the game cornered. All right, guys. So I wanted to be very succinct and focused today because I think there's a lot to take from that Kings game, and I think it's funny to say that about a fucking Kings game, because you know it's the Kings. But the Kings were on a 3-game winning streak. They were looking pretty good. Their offense is like legit good, and they have like probably the fastest player in the NBA. Right, De'Aaron Fox is fucking awesome. He's a stud. I know Buddy Hield has that contract, but the dude can flat out shoot. And, you know, they're not the best team, right? But, you know, when the Heat were on a 5-game losing streak and any of these wins, we take any of these. I think Siobhan said it on Hangover Time last night. It's like the first one or the other day, like the first win after the losing streak is always going to be the hardest. And then you kind of get rolling from here. So let's talk positives because there were a lot. And we have to start with Jimmy Butler and what he brings to the team. I tweeted out the other day, Jack, that the Heat are 19th in free throw rate. They get to the rim the second fewest times in the league, and that's even adjusted per pace. And that's just not how Jimmy Butler plays basketball. Jimmy Butler gets to the free throw line, and Jimmy Butler gets to the rim. And I think we saw that on full display yesterday. Got 16 free throws. Was really in attack mode going north-south. They finally got their full playbook back because they really did not have a guy that commands help the way Jimmy does. Because Goran can get to the rim, and Goran's a good north-south player, but Goran's not getting that kind of help that Jimmy gets because Jimmy's a better passer than Goran, and Jimmy has a bit more, I don't know if it's acceleration because Goran's plenty, but Jimmy's just, he has a lot more gravity kind of coming off that pick and roll stuff, and they were doing a lot of like kind of elbow handoffs instead of Bam kind of handing off at the three-point line. They're running that a little closer to the paint, and that was really fruitful for them, Jack. So I for one am really happy that Jimmy's back. The stuff in the paint I thought was the biggest difference maker.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of, it's really easy to forget what having a superstar come back does for this team, and I think you just don't remember how good Jimmy Butler is until you go several weeks without him, and all of a sudden a team that made the finals looks like a team that can't play NBA basketball. And I mean, they still had all of the same, they have problems that they need to address, but this is at least the Heat team, right? Like, we're watching the Heat now. We were not watching the Heat basketball this month or whatever. And I'm curious how you guys thought Jimmy Butler looked. We talked about it in the pregame show, and we've been talking about it, how he's going to look coming back. That, like, I was kind of worried that he might rush himself back, but I thought he looked good. Like, he was pretty quick. He looked kind of light on his feet in a way that, like, maybe I hadn't seen in a while. Not to say he was like quicker or whatever. There were definitely, I think, moments where like he wasn't getting the same lift that you'd want him to, or like, you know, it just kind of seemed like there was some rust to shake off, which is ridiculous because he had like 37-8, which is incredible. But like, I thought he looked good. I thought he looked better than I could have hoped for him to look. And the whole like Jimmy Butler Bam dynamic is going to be a game changer. And I don't think we're ready for what that's going to look like, because Bam is a completely different player. And like, we'll get into Bam. I still have issues with the way he played, but I think he needs to figure out his role once again within this new, I guess, Heat paradigm where they're actually healthy. Or we don't know if they're going to be healthy because, you know, Tyler Hero.
I mean, we're going to get into that later on in the show. The thing I want to kind of pivot, not pivot, but like kind of add to what you're saying about how he looked and everything, 33 minutes last night, which is not – an unreasonable amount of minutes played. Now that's right at his season average the last four seasons, so or last three seasons. So Moose, like, they manage his minutes. He plays a very aggressive style of basketball. He's very physical. He wants contact. He wants all this stuff. Like, that's the important stuff, right? So he's getting north south. He's getting to the rim. He's doing all that stuff, and it just changes Miami's offense dramatically because Duncan had a good game. Was 4-for-7 from three, and all of a sudden, every time he comes off a handoff, they can't trap him, which just, because Jimmy's such a good mover without the ball, he really floats, he does that Dwayne Wade ghost cut, he's just a great mover, right? So they have all these elements back in their offense. Tyler's also playing, which, you know, he's another guy that if you kind of swing the ball to him, you know, not only is he a plus shooter, even though he's not shooting the ball well this year, he's defended as a plus shooter, and he's proven that he's going to attack a closeout, and if you're not in great position, he's going right by you. He's a really crafty finisher. That mid-range pull-up game has been money. We're over 50% shooting on that on the year, which is a trend that I'm going to bring up every time I can, because that is legitimately like offense breaking for him as a player. So Jimmy, with all these cogs around him moving, they got semblance of an offense, Moose.
Listen, we were talking about it last night. With Jimmy Butler back, everybody ups their game because they're not being asked to step out of their role to an extent that's going to take them out of it energy-wise on the opposite side of the floor. That's been something that we've been lacking the entire time. Jimmy Butler allows everybody else to play within their lane and to play more aggressively in that lane. And everyone's just more comfortable that way. And then just wait till we get back Goran Dragic, and then Jimmy Butler can also take a step back from dominating the ball every single possession and getting his own looks off ball movements.
So they've only played 28 minutes together, the three of them, Goran, Jimmy, and Bam, which is just crazy. That's insane. Their team's not complete.
Yeah.
It's just not. Like, they haven't played, like, their team, like, the team that made the finals has not played together. By the way, Jack, chat saying that you look like they're going to sell sketchy warranty.
I saw that. I'm kind of just trying to ignore it, but thanks for bringing it up. I'll cry after we get off the pod. Thanks, guys.
What kind of warranty? Like that 7-year warranty on an appliance that you're gonna forget about. It's gonna be locked in your closet, and you're gonna come to. It's gonna break, but you're gonna miss a warranty by like 2 weeks. That's happened to me so many times. I remember like, oh, that's right, I bought an extended warranty on that, and I missed it by 2 weeks.
Always miss it. That's how they build them.
That's my life. That's life now. What happened, Frankie?
No, that's how they get you, because they always count on you forgetting that. I said Jack looks like Hustler Kid from Recess.
I love that. Such a great call out.
So speaking of extended
content.
Speaking of extended warranty, do they have one on Kendrick Nunn?
Oh god.
Honestly, like I like the minutes that Gabe played, and that was something that I talked about. That
I like the minutes that Kendrick Nunn played last night.
Me too.
Same. We all did.
My favorite part. Yeah.
And I know that it was not a DMP coach's decision. He did not play because he had an outstanding test result, and I think the Heat, unlike the Sixers, did the responsible thing, did not play him. And when it came to Spo, was settled in the rotation, and we know how Spo is. So Gabe was that guy, and that's what they were running with, right? So to me, that's a huge positive that Gabe looked good next to them, Frankie. Gabe looked good. He looked competent. I think he's a better on-ball defender than Nunn. He has a spot-up shooting game. I think he's a better playmaker and a better decision-maker than Nunn. Nunn has a little more zip going to the rim, especially. He has, you know, he can dunk. Has a little left-hand jam that he's good at, and he's pretty igniting in a fast break. But I think, in general, Gabe provides them a little more versatility.
Yeah, because he can contribute on both ends more than Nunn can.
Not that he's a good defender, but that...
No, but he tries. The effort's there, the angles. He takes better angles on screens. He is able to get into a lower stance defensively than Nunn is. And top of the 2-3 is more of a threat when Gabe is there with Jimmy or Andre or whoever else than when Nunn is anywhere on defense. Gabe tries hard. And he's not a guy who's, you know, looking for his shot as opposed to everybody else. He's good with playing his role. Gabe played 11 minutes, took 2 shots. I bet you there's no time Nunn took more than 2 shots and more than 5 minutes of game time in his career. He just chucks them up. So that's the kind of, like, that's the ninth, tenth guy that we need in that role. Just play your role, move the ball offensively, take the shots when they're there. 1-3 he hit was at like end of the shot clock, good rotation, hit his shot. And that's what we need all out of
him.
That's
a guy
all we need to ask out of him.
That I trust if they're swinging the ball, right? And they do this a lot. Like, they'll get the penetration, and then they'll kick, and then it'll be like swing, swing. And if he's that last guy in the corner, because usually when they kick out, Duncan's the guy that catches it up top. Duncan or Tyler, and the defense is darting at all hell to get into them, either whether it's from the corner or from the middle. And when they do that swing, swing pass, when Gabe is the last guy in the corner, feet totally set, because you know the play's coming to you, right? Like, it's something that, okay, I am ready, I'm prepared, I'm set, and I'm going to catch the ball in rhythm, gather, and shoot in my motion comfortably in rhythm. And I trust him a lot more than Nunn in that role. And I trust him to be there more. I think Nunn's a little bit more of a freelancer on offense. I think Gabe kind of picks his spots and stands there more, which is, I think, good when you have stars. You know, when Jimmy's going to the paint, you know, it's good. He needs to know where his pieces are. Like, he needs
There's never been a second that Kendrick Nunn has been on the floor where I didn't immediately know he was on the floor, and I wasn't immediately annoyed by it. Like, to Frankie's point, like, when he gets the ball, he's going to take a shot or try to take a shot. Whereas Gabe Vincent, like, does exactly what I want from like a ninth or tenth man. I want to not know he's there. That's like the best thing I could ask from him, is that I don't, that the fact that I'm not annoyed by Gabe Vincent is the most positive thing I could say about him, because I don't expect him to be good. He's not a good player. He's a like end of bench player, and that's fine. But like, he does all of the things he needs to do, nothing more and nothing less, and he doesn't actively sabotage like what they're doing on offense. To your point, like, you know, he can do everything they're doing. And I think Moose put it perfectly, is having the stars back allows people to play within their lanes and like be aggressive within their lanes. Like, that's exactly it. Like, you're not asking Gabe Vincent to score 20 points for you so you can win, which is a thing that they were doing like only a week ago.
It was awful.
And it was insane. And people were actually like, let's see what we can get from Gabe Vincent tonight.
Like Alf said, he was marquee. That's insane.
Yeah.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
He was on the graphic. He was on the graphic.
I mean, that's wild.
We talked about it in the chat. I like seeing Gabe Vincent on the marquee gave me flashbacks to like the 2015 Heat season. Like, we went through those dark days, like the period in between, like the Dwayne Wade, Miami, like Big Three era, and like and Jimmy Butler. Like, we went through those dark days where we saw G Leaguer after G Leaguer get hyped up, like as if they could be the next big thing.
We're gonna get into one of those G Leaguers.
I never want to hear it again.
Look, no one's perfect. Even the best baseball player strikes out when the bases are loaded. The best golfer sometimes three putt with the tournament on the line. So if you feel like you're coming up short in the bedroom, it's perfectly okay. But if it's bothering you, there are options. Go get to roman.com/heatbeat21 now. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. A U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, it ships to you for free with two-day shipping. And the whole process is discreet and straightforward. Getting started is simple. Go get to roman.com/heatbeat21 and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving home. Complete the online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. Go get to roman.com/heatbeat21 to get $15 off your first month. Look, that's a straightforward way to take care of your ED. Get to roman.com/heatbeat21. Go get started to save $15 on your first month of treatment. We got to get to some of the Rodney content later. So CH Torres in chat asked, which is actually something that I wanted to get to, how did you guys feel about Strus being in the closing lineup? So I actually am going to defend this because at the time it was a little frustrating, but I understood it because the Heat were having issues with the Kings' speed, and De'Aaron Fox was absolutely tormenting them all night, torturing, all everything and every adjective in the book. They could not stay in front of him, and it's, you know, not that Duncan and Tyler and Gabe are good defenders, right? But I mean, there just comes a point that like there's nothing they could do, because even Jimmy was on him at times, and it was just, he's just too fast. He's one of those guys that he's a special offensive player. So what the Heat decided to do is, okay, well, in pick and roll, he's just killing us. And also, he was very willingly taking pull-ups and threes, and he was beating our guys even in drop. So they're like, let's switch. Let's downsize, because our offense is best when Jimmy Butler's at power forward with shooters. So what they did is they went Duncan, Tyler, Strus, Jimmy, and Bam. And they're like, Jimmy, Bam, shooters, which has been one of their best lineups all season. Because if you look at any variation of it, it's outscoring opponents by double digits per 100 possessions in any permutation that you look at, right? Andre is a bit tougher because he's not guarded as much as Strus is. So that's kind of the decision. And I think that it kind of came between Andre and Strus. But I like the spacing they got. And when the Kings were attacking on offense, the Heat were switching. And what they would do is they would, you know, in the beginning, Bam was switching on to De'Aaron Fox, and then those possessions became Buddy Hield isolations, right? Because they're not a sophisticated offense outside of, you know, Fox beats anybody off the dribble, and then they have chaos, and then they thrive. So when you have that Bam switch, all of a sudden, this huge center is guarding your guard, and your guard can't get past him, which is why Bam's a fucking beast. And then Buddy Hield all of a sudden is ISOing at the end of the shot clock. Then what the Kings did was, okay, well, and this is coaching. Let's have guard screen for De'Aaron, and we're going to get those switches, right? So then that's kind of where the Strus thing became pretty kind of apparent. It's like, well, what are they doing? Because now Max Strus is getting switched on to De'Aaron Fox, and it was a product of the Heat downsizing and saying, we need to stop this guy. And then I think in the end it was a sound decision because, you know, Andre's not going to give you the offensive versatility that Strus does. And I know that Andre's played really well, but I'm not mad at the decision. And I think you want Jimmy had it going, and you're going to trust Jimmy in space, right? Because if they're just cramming the paint for him, it's not something you want. I don't know, Frankie, like, do you feel the same way about it? Like, I understand. And like, Spo is playing with a limited deck. He doesn't have all his cards. So, you know, on a night like that, that's kind of what you got to do. But I understand why people were torn off by it.
No, and Andre probably would have been closing earlier if he had was hitting a couple of shots. But yeah, he was 0-for-5 from 3 on good looks. So, you know, you can't really fault him. And Strus made 2 big plays with his 2 backdoor layups that he created by being awake and reading the defense and making good plays. And you can't be mad at him. He made plays. And then when Spo needed one final stop, he took him out for Andre, and they got the win. So, like, I can't be mad at him. Like you said, he's playing with limited deck. He had to play 30 minutes of KZ, Gabe Vincent, and Max Strus. The rest of the guys were rotation guys, and he was able to survive with that. But normally you're going to have Goran and Bradley taking those 30 minutes and not having Tyler wouldn't have to play 40 minutes. Duncan wouldn't have to play 35. Jimmy, 34 minutes is pretty good.
And that's good. You
that's
like pretty, that.
That's what exactly what you want. And Jimmy
in a close game, you take more. That.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, like, I'm not too mad about it. I was concerned at first, but Strus made good plays. Strus isn't dumb. So he makes smart plays offensively. He can hit open shots. He doesn't take too many bad threes. Like, I'm not – it's very rare where I'm looking at a Strus three, like, what the hell is that? You know, so I wasn't mad at him playing a couple minutes there.
He's a guy – like, they have too many ninth guys that are playing minutes. That's the issue.
They have a roster full of ninth guys other than their top – 3 or 4.
6.
That's being kind.
Or they're top 6.
I think
9
is being kind for a lot of these guys.
I think you have Jimmy, 1, Tyler, Duncan, Andre, Bam. That's 5. Goran,
none
6.
Goran. I mean, not none.
Olenek.
Olenek, 7. And Olenek played well yesterday, and I thought that was kind of big for them because he's really given them nothing on offense, and he's better than that. I mean, he's a really good finisher, and I thought kind of once they got him rolling to the basket a little more, which is a product of playing with Jimmy, you're going to get more – your bigs are going to get more kind of north-south motion, and that really helped him, and he hit a couple threes, so that was good. So I think they have 7 rotational NBA players, and then kind of after that, you know, you have a lot of ninth guys being 8th guys, right? You have, you know –
yeah.
Gabe and Strus and Mo Harkless, right, and all these and KZ, as much as we love and hype him up. And listen, I want to be accountable on this show. We've talked so much shit about KZ, and he just, like, flat out did not look good, look bad, and rightfully got pulled, rightfully got benched, and, you know, he has to be better. And I think the reps are important, and I'm gonna hammer this home. He has to play, because unless the coaching staff feels no, this is who he is, which it could be. I mean, he's been in the system for a year and change, did not really get a training camp, but did not get in summer league. I think we have to remember that, and it's not an excuse for him, and also not unfair to Nunn as well, because we're, like, really hard on Nunn. Nunn didn't get a second training camp and a second summer league, because that really helps your development, right? And there's no G League this year too. So, like, let's be fair to these guys, but also, like, let's, you know, we've pumped a lot of KZ noise, so I'm willing to, like, you know, take my medicine on that one. Just was a minus on both ends.
I've been more down on KZ than I think more like the Heat beat consensus has been. But I think he does need the reps. I think you're totally right on that. Mostly just because there's not another option, right? Like, who is at the other position? Like, you, well, I mean, just in general, you say they have seven rotational guys. You need eight, right? You need eight.
They have like 6.5 because like Olenek on a, like, 5, on a bad like, day. Yeah.
KZ is the only guy, I think. Yeah, Bradley.
Yeah, Bradley. But, okay. Bradley.
So they need
have 7.5 rotation guys.
Okay. My point is they need one more rotational guy.
I agree with you.
And you're going to need it to be KZ right now, yeah. Especially if you're looking to fill that four spot. Don't get me wrong. It's nothing against KO because I still think he's going to get the minutes there. But we can't be relying on that all year long. And especially deep in the playoffs, I feel. You know, so yeah. I want KZ to get these minutes now. And I agree. He looked terrible last night. When it comes down to the defensive switches and all that, I'm starting to get frustrated at the fact that he can't pick it up. But
he's a good on-ball defender.
But he's a good on-ball defender, and what he's giving you energy-wise on the offensive side as well, at least being able to like pull guys out and create space for others, we need that right now. And he's not going to get better if he doesn't get the minutes.
So I think this is important to note. So Crab Photographer in chat, friend of ours, he loves Sioux Falls for some weird reason. Who knows a lot about Sioux Falls, watches a lot of Sioux Falls basketball. And I know this has been documented. It's KZ was the same non-entity in Sioux Falls, which I don't think is a small thing. And I know that people laughed at me when I said, you know, I think he should play over Harkless, and then be like, yeah, you know, he was one of the worst D-League players last year. And, you know, that's all fair. That's all fair, and that's all well documented. And him not looking at the basket is a problem. He's been infected by Jimmy Butleritis, where passing out of layups and shit. So we have to see. I mean, I just wanted to take my medicine on that. And I think that this transitions just really nicely into kind of something the chat has been clamoring. I know Tez Pickett was asking about JJ Redick and kind of like, and we've kind of internally talked a lot about like moves and stuff. And I think that looking at what we said, you know, there's 7.5-ish rotation players. I think that if they're going to be legit title contenders, they need to replace two of those bottom guys with like legit, like maybe like two number fives, right? Like or a number three and a number six. You know what I mean? Like, but I think that the high end's a little tougher. And I know Victor Oladipo is a guy that we've kind of talked about a lot. But if they're gonna legit be a title contender, this team, because I think that their offense is gonna be good, and I think that they're gonna figure some stuff out. But they're clearly a couple pieces away. And if you can shore up your playoff rotation by replacing two of those bottom guys with some high quality players that you're like, okay, this is a legit like fifth guy on a really good team, and you get two of those, you know, you don't have to swing for the fences, but that changes things. Like a guy like JJ Redick, who by the way is shooting poorly this year, a guy like Lonzo Ball, right, a guy like Otto Porter, a guy like PJ Tucker, right? Like, so these are the guys that, you know, have not been great this year, but when you're in this kind of position, you got to roll the dice, right, Jack? So like they did that last year. You know, they did it with Iguodala and with Jay Crowder. Jay Crowder, by the way, was not playing well in Memphis. Like, was playing, like, legit bad. The shooting was bad. The defense wasn't there, right? So they just rolled the dice on a veteran that they said, well, I think if we get this guy in our system with our Hall of Fame coach, we're going to put them in positions to win.
Yeah, you got to buy low on somebody.
And I think that they're kind of void of movable.
And you look
parts.
Like the perfect stock trader right now to give us that information.
No, but like I've been pounding this drum like all like since before the season, is that like they're going to need another Iguodala, Jay Crowder type move that puts them in position like from kind of a middle of the road playoff team to a team that can like legitimately like compete in at the highest level of the sport, which is like they're right there, they have all of the pieces, and they're just like a few guys short. And if they hit right, if they find another Jay Crowder, they don't even, I don't think they need, I think what Jay Crowder gave the Heat last year was kind of like astronomical and like out of this world. Like he was shooting like, I think he shot 44% from three with us, which is even with like he kind of went cold in the playoffs, like, or he was incredible. Like they just need like a body. They need like a Derrick Jones Jr. even, like just somebody who can be out there and give them like a defensive presence at the four, or like extra shooting or something.
The Derrick thing's funny because Moose, like, I'm not a Derrick guy. I've never been a DJJ guy. I've always kind of been out on him. But one of the things that I've kind of missed on a guy like that is the length, especially when they run their zone, because their zone has no bite. Their zone is soft. Their zone is like honestly kind of useless this season. I don't know the I don't have the numbers on it, and I'm sure that we can ask Christian for them tomorrow, but their zone hasn't been very good, and I think part of that was what's made the zone special last year is they had a lot of really athletic long guys at the front of that zone, disrupting passes, creating turnovers, right? The Heat are the turnover team now, but before, you know, they were the ones turning people over with the zone, and now it's not Derek, and it's not Myers, and it's not, you know, Jay Crowder at the top of that zone. It's Mo Harkless, it's KZ Akpala, it's, you know, these smaller look, guys.
You're saying what the problem is right now. It's the mix of people. Look, the only difference in our system from this year to last year is that we don't have the same mix of guys in that stretch four that
fit.
Can defend up and defend down. You know, that's it. We didn't change the way that we're defending. We changed the pieces, and look at the pieces you just mentioned.
Last year's team was like kind of greater than the sum of their parts, right? Because you look at a guy like Crowder
absolutely.
Or Derek, and you're just like, it's not like you put him anywhere else. You're just like, whatever. Like, Jay's whatever in Phoenix. Derek's been pretty good in Portland, but you know, they're kind of like whatever pieces, right? They're probably like what we're saying right now, six men, right? Seven through five men, right?
But you and put they were that just together
in the right situation. Which is why, like, I'm big on a guy like Otto Porter, because Otto's shooting the ball really well, but he kind of moves like cement, which has kind of concerned me. But I also think that, like, the Heat will put him in spots to win, right? It's kind of my thing with Thad Young. Like, you get these veterans that are really smart basketball players that, like, know what they're doing. Like, you look at what Draymond's doing over there in Golden State, like, just the value of a smart player. Even if you're not the best shooter in the world, even if you're not, like, the crazy athlete you used to be, you know, when you have a really smart, disciplined veteran playing alongside a superstar, and the Heat have those, that really goes a long way. So that's, I don't know, like, it's tough because I know, Jack, you really want Oladipo, and obviously he would be a huge help for this team. There's just no denying that. I know you and Alf gave it to me, and I've really come to your side on that. you know, they need more than a piece, though. They need two, I think.
Yeah, I think Oladipo would be great, but like beyond that, I would love Thad Young or Otto Porter. Like with Jay Crowder, he shot exceptionally, but like he wasn't really an exceptional floor spacer. Like he could keep the defense honest, but like I don't think anybody really bought the fact that he was a 3-point shooter. Everybody thought he was a mediocre 3-point shooter, and like he would make them pay sometimes, but like deep in the playoffs, he wasn't even really hitting shots, but like he was still really good for them because he could defend up and down, and he was a body. Like really, you don't even need somebody incredible. You don't need somebody like impressive. You just need somebody who's not going to screw up. And when Jimmy Butler gives you the ball, do something with it. Like keep the defense honest, and you know, do your part on defense. I think an Otto Porter, like that's the kind of guy who like is flawed enough where he'd be available. Like the Heat are clearly protective of their assets, maybe a little stingy, some people would say. Like I don't know if they're overvaluing or like I trust them to make moves generally, but they're not going to get even an Oladipo at this point. I don't think they're willing to move those pieces at all. So it's going to have to be a smaller move, and maybe Otto Porter is that guy, maybe Thad Young is that guy. I really hope, you know, just for the NBA's sake, that Chicago gives those guys up, because it is a Please. Crime to waste that talent in Chicago. I mean, I feel the same way about, like, I think Chef Trilly on Twitter today said something about Vucevic.
Yes.
Which is like, that would be interesting, right? Like, I don't think the Heat have the assets at all to get him, but like a Vooch Bam front court would be incredible, I think.
So my thing with that was, if that's like, teams always force you to downsize in the playoffs, right? Especially in the, I think in the West it'd be a little different. I think in the West you can get away with it. In the East, the Celtics play really small, and the Bucks will play Giannis at center and completely force you small. And the Nets are going to play really small. So you look at the Philly's only team that you're like, well, they play big motherfuckers. Like, okay, fine. Yeah. We could play big against Philly. But Philly doesn't worry me. I mean, they almost won with Gabe Vincent. Like, I'm not really worried about Philly, right? So if I look at those three teams, I think, well, and Trilly and I had this conversation. I was like, well, typically a guy like Vooch gets played off the floor. And even the Lakers last year were played small by Kelly Olynyk and Jimmy Butler. Like, let's not forget that. Let's not forget that the Lakers went through the Western Conference playing two bigs. And when they got to the Heat and they were carving them up, they're like, never mind. We're just going to play AD at the five and LeBron at the four. All right, we're not going to play two traditional centers, which was what they were doing. So, you know, playing Bam and Vooch together, I think you can get away with it for a long time. I think crunch time against the Celtics or against the Nets, it's going to be tough because at the end of the day, to quote our good friend Alex Toledo, when Vooch is in drop against a guy like KD, against a guy like Jason Tatum, Harden, Irving, even Jaylen Brown this year, who's been fucking incredible, or Kemba Walker, or whatever. Any of those guys that are going to kind of put them in pick and roll, because you can't switch him. You have to bet that whatever damage they're going to do to you in a defensive scheme that they are built to exploit, that Vooch is going to win that back on the other end. You have to be sure of that. You have to be sure that whatever Vooch has given up, because KD is feasting on that drop, and Kyrie and all that stuff, you have to be sure that Vooch is going to give you enough on the other end that you can survive playing that way. And that's where I have questions. But Vooch is good enough, and he is good enough of a shooter that it makes, and you know how I feel about playing two bigs. It makes me think. I agree with you. I don't think they have the juice. Yeah.
Duncan's would he cost table, but... less than Oladipo? I think he would cost just as much, right? Like,
no, I think.
No, he would, okay, hey, maybe. I don't know. I don't know what his contract looks like right now, but like,
he's not a free agent.
They would have to give up like Hero or Duncan, which is like, yeah, they're not going to do that for Vooch.
Well, and like,
I'll be honest, Duncan... I don't know if I sign off on that right now.
No, I mean, I would not.
This is literally the first time hearing this. I didn't see the show up really sweet. Sorry, buddy. But so I'm just thinking about this now. But if you're telling me that's the price, I mean.
No, I wouldn't do the trade.
So he's under contract till 2023, and he's set to make 26, 24, and 22 million. So he has a declining base salary, similar to Harrison Barnes, which I think is really interesting. Harrison Barnes has a similar kind of contract, which he's another guy that, you know, you can look at if you're the Heat and say, well, that's a guy that I feel like if he's in our system, you know, that's a guy that started for a finals team. Two finals.
I'd be more interested in him than Vooch, if I'm being completely honest.
I don't know what
the contract is there, though.
Similar. Kind of declining in the 20s, mid to low 20s.
It expires after in 2 years, $20 million next year, $18 million the year after.
Okay.
I love these declining contracts.
That's not that bad.
It's not. It's reasonable. Yeah. And I mentioned this the other day. The Heat have a kind of interesting offseason because they're not going to have a full max slot, but they're going to have some cap room. Right, so they're going to be able to absorb a contract in a trade or outright sign a guy. And Duncan, if they're going to pay Duncan, his cap hold's really small. So if you remember last season, they had an issue kind of having – they had fake cap space because even though they had $20-something million in cap space, Goran had a $28 million cap hold. So unless they renounced Goran's cap, which they were not going to do because they wanted to re-sign him, they didn't have real cap space. So this year, they actually have real cap space because the cap holds are minimal. It's Duncan who's making peanuts, right? It's a little peon contract. Or whatever. Shout out, by the way, Twisted Tapioca. God, you're gifting so many subs. We fucking love you, man. Oh, God, what a hero.
Yo, Twisted Tapioca.
For the gift sub. We appreciate that so much. Yeah, and some people in chat are like, Orlando's not going to let Vooch go. They'd rather have Aaron Gordon, which the idea of Aaron Gordon might be better than Aaron Gordon in practice. But, you know, he's a guy that, I said this before, the Heat have a culture that you bet on. They have the kind of culture that you think, we bring a guy in here and they're going to be good. And that's kind of where they are. And, man, it's just good. You know, they're coming off a win. You know, we can actually talk about them being good again. Kind of we're talking in the sense of how do we get them to the finals, not how do we get them into the playoffs. I think that this is going to be a springboard. They have a pretty soft schedule coming up. They play the Wizards twice, play a bunch of bad teams before they start playing some good ones. So, real quick, I wanted to get to Tyler because then I want to pivot to Rodney Magruder talk because there's there's a funny Draymond Green clip going around. Kind of mean, but we'll get into that. Tyler, apparently somebody he lives with. What, Jack, what was the tweet? It was a virus. How did the Heat phrase it?
Oh,
barely poorly worded.
Will Manso posted something. Local 10 said, Heat say hero may miss time for virus-related issue, which sounds...
What are we doing?
Just a weird phrasing. I don't know. Like, I guess that's correct. Like, that is what it is. It's a virus-related issue. But it sounds...
PR, you're doing him no favors.
It sounds too vague.
What kind of virus? Could be any virus.
I mean, he already said last night the whole, like, you know, that somebody tested positive in his house. So it's already out there. You can just say COVID protocol and keep him out. Like, this is not helping when you know what his relationships are away from the court.
I'm kind of annoyed that they go health and safety protocols. We all know what it is. Call it the damn COVID protocol.
Well, that's why I like virus-related issues. Like, it's COVID, right?
Like, yeah. Like, but that is the natural follow-up.
It's not fucking weird. H1N1. It's COVID. Like, you can say what virus it is. Yeah.
So, like, I don't know Tyler's living situation. So, you know, somebody he lives with, whoever that is, we can all speculate.
Wait, I want to know what you guys pictured when you saw, like, I saw somebody he's living with, and I immediately imagined Tyler Hero, like, living in a TikTok hype house. Like,
exactly. With a bunch of young you so nailed it.
I was at least
eight people.
But, like, it's probably his girlfriend, but it's a testament to who Tyler Hero is. Is I immediately imagine, like, a house with eight people, and they're all making TikToks or doing something like that. Like,
I thought of a UM frat house. I thought he lived at a UM frat house.
Yeah, something like that. Like,
yeah, like.
But it's probably
one of his fraternity brothers caught COVID, and you know it's dangerous right now. So that's happening, which sucks because, like, they finally look, Goran and Avery are coming back next game, and you would think, well, finally they're gonna have some health, and no, we're not, which sucks because then, you know, one of those guard spots, you know, that means our favorite Kendrick Nunn minutes or Gabe minutes, that more Gabe or Kendrick than we want, but you know, whatever, they're close. Hopefully it's nothing. He's questionable, I think, or doubtful, I don't remember, so it's not a for sure.
I believe I read him as questionable.
Yeah,
probably safer to keep him out.
Of course, but again, and this goes back to, like, just what we've been saying all year. So the rest of the team is okay now? Like, it's fine because they didn't
all played
after the
with
game. Him. Like, what the hell? That's what I don't understand. Okay, so Tyler will be out as he should, but then the rest of these guys, like, when are we gonna get over all this? Come on. Like, I feel like it's just a never ending saga.
It's a revolving door of health, and it's
really
they can't,
absurd.
It's crazy, and it's sense. It doesn't at all. Like, I at least hope that when we come to the playoffs, you know, they institute some sort of a bubble for the playoffs, because we at least when the games really, really matter, you kind of hope that, you know, they at least get some semblance of certainty, right? Or maybe the last stretch of the season. I don't know what they'll do. Hopefully the players sign off on it, so, you know, we can all enjoy some safe and good basketball, because it's not fun to watch, you know, a Clippers team without their two best players and the Heat without their two of their three best players play a game, right? Nobody wins. Nobody wants to watch it, right? It wasn't – I don't even think it was fun for Clippers fans. Nobody had fun.
I just don't want to see Gabe Vincent on the marquee going into a playoff game. Don't give me that, all right?
Well, when they put KZ, I was like, well, they better play him. You know what I mean? Like, they're putting this dude. I was like, you better hope to God you play him, or I'm going to slander the shit out of you on Twitter. That's all we have. Twitter's our only weapon. Okay, so before we go, I know we're running on time. Have you guys heard? So are you guys familiar with what happened with Magruder last night?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know the basics of it, yes. I got caught up this morning.
So there was some sort of kerfuffle with the Warriors and Rodney. And Rodney, you know, all-around nice guy. You know, shout out to the scavenger. You know, nice guy, Rodney Magruder. Friend of the show, by the way. Friend of the show, has been on with us. We love Rodney. We are supportive of Rodney. We are hashtag free Rodney lifers. We've advocated for preseason Rodney. It's one of the greatest Heat players who has ever played in a Heat uniform, along with preseason Gerald Green. Just absolutely, you know, Hall of Fame talents.
Heat lifer.
So Rodney. So I'm gonna play the clip. So apparently Klay Thompson was on the broadcast, and he was roasting, poor Rodney Magruder, which is just, you know, Klay's supposed to be a nice guy. So this kind of surprised me.
2%, but more importantly, they hold the Pistons under 40%. What's Magruder doing over there? Is a little scuffle.
What are you talking about, Juan?
And then everything seems to be okay there. Klay's figuring out what's going on over there, Klay.
Rodney Magruder.
Oh no, this dude might be out the league soon. He's probably mad about that. Who knows?
Wow. Shots fired.
Over here checking my guy. You good? Everybody seems to be okay, and everybody's going to their respective locker rooms there. But
yeah, I don't know.
So that will end it right there. But
that's savage.
Five
over here trying to start something like he's a good player or something. It's like, bro, get out of here. You might be sorry. All right, we're done.
Easy. Oh my god.
So Clay is eviscerating poor Rodney, which is like surprising. I'm just like, damn, like that's your period. It wasn't even a big deal, right? So that happens, and then Draymond Green in the post game comes out with this.
I was in the locker room, but apparently he was taking up for Wayne Ellington. When the fuck Rodney McGruder become the tough guy of the team? Like, I don't know, man. Everybody in the league tough these days. It's crazy. I've seen a lot of tough guys this year. I don't understand it. And don't nobody do anything. So, like, if you really wanted to do something, you could have done it. Walk over there talking shit like he's a team tough guy. The hell out of here. Fucking tough guy, Rodney. Fucking tough guy. Also, I'm rocking with Y&T. Y&T was about to bring that town bid. Business shit out on him, and yeah, I'm rocking with Juan T on that one anyway. But also, I think it was something that Juan said in the first or second quarter to Wayne Ellington. You ain't got nothing better to do that you still thinking about something from the first or second quarter when you weren't in the game. So apparently,
he lied for
Wayne Ellington must have went over to the bench. I guess he went and told Rodney McGruder because he hadn't been in the game. Yeah. I don't know, man. It's too many tough guys in this league these days for me. But I know ain't nobody scared of no damn Rodney McGruder. Like, fucking kidding me?
Excellent dismount by Draymond Green there. Ain't nobody scared of fucking Rodney McGruder. Which is just like, well, why is Rodney, like, come on, leave Rodney and Heat Life for Wayne Ellington alone. It was a long clip, Jack. I know. And Draymond had a lot of pauses, and you guys don't see the video.
I didn't know when it was stopping.
No, I know, yeah.
To cut it off or this is why I want the Warriors to be good again soon. Not like Durant level good, not like that good, but like they are a fun bunch of folks who really love talking shit. And it's good for the league because I think Steph likes talking shit. Draymond loves talking shit. And even Clay, like, they all love talking shit. And I think
fun.
Like one of the best parts of the NBA is that you get this kind of open shit talk. And like, it's wonderful.
Like imagine if, like, they're in a playoff series and, like, Moose, I know you're, like, nodding. Like, imagine Draymond's just talking shit to AD or something.
Well, I mean, I love this for a number of reasons. One, sign me up for any and all NBA soap opera theatrics talking shit to each other. I don't care if it's the star, the number one guy, or the last guy on the bench. I love that stuff, and I'm here for all of it. I hate that our boy Rodney McGruder got the casualty shots for it. God, but you know what? Man. That's kind of what comes with it when you mess with some of those guys, especially the Warriors guys. You know they're going to talk. Clay's comments completely caught me off guard just because you're thinking, like, cool Clay. I did not think he was going to go with this guy's going to be out of the league soon. But that just makes me want to tune in for the next game more. And believe me, the NBA knows that sells and they love it too.
It's good. And like, I heard Ethan Strauss kind of talk on his podcast. He's like, you know, Warriors clicks are way up, right? Like on The Athletic, Warriors clicks are really dominant. So people like this shit. People love Draymond. Like, we love to hate him. We love him. I mean, it's just, it's fun for the league, and it's, I don't know. It's good. And I like that we have a guy like that. Cause like Jimmy's out here, you know, talking shit. I mean, dude, I say this all the time, and this is probably like an overly quoted anecdote by me, but he scored over the fucking MVP and Defensive Player of the Year, stared into the crowd, to his family, said, he can't guard me. And he was right. It's fucking
there awesome. Was a moment where he was talking shit. I'm talking about Jimmy. He pulled over Precious. I guess Precious had missed a cut or something. I honestly wasn't paying attention to it. Neither was Precious. And he lit into him. And that's the type of energy that we need. You know, Jimmy was doing that everywhere else, and it just was kind of going in one ear, out the other, misconstrued. But that's what this team was very much lacking while Jimmy was out. That energy just changes everything for us.
So well received too by like the Heat, and you know, and by the way, like I recommend listening to the latest Low Post where Zach Lowe talked to Nick Friedell. They kind of talked about the splitting of Jimmy and the organization, right? That whole Dwayne Wade Butler era, and then what the decision that the Bulls made, you know, kind of moving off of Jimmy and kind of going young, and how that's like a really important like moment for the league, and how the Heat really embraced the parts of Jimmy that the Bulls grew tired of. And the fruit it yielded was a finals appearance, right? And just, you know, him playing, you know, superstar basketball, right? Like he's that guy. Like he's that good. By the way, Draymond Green would be so fucking fun here.
He should have always been here, but that's a whole other discussion.
Draymond and Bam with Jimmy is just fucking awesome. I mean, just defensively, it's just awesome. And then just the shit talk. I mean, Jimmy and Dre are cut from the same cloth. Like, it's just, right, Frankie? Like, that's perfect.
Yeah, Draymond is one of those guys who would be an immediate fit here. There's just certain guys in the league that, you know, there's the James Hardens where you doubt the culture fit, but there's guys who, like, embody it. And Jimmy was always one of those guys. Draymond's one of those guys. Guy like Chris Paul is one of those guys, just like guys who are obsessed with the craft, love the game, and love competing, and are, you know, sometimes have culture issues in their own organizations, just because guy, you know, they're not always empowered with their front office, with coaching staff, with other players around them. They're, you know, it's a certain type of guy, and. You know, Draymond's 100% one of those guys who's just fucking crazy about basketball and competing and cerebral with everything about the game.
It's kind of crazy because, like, Dwayne is not like that. Dwayne's very Hollywood, right? But, I mean, Dwayne's Heat culture. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, Dwayne's Heat culture, but Dwayne's not. Jimmy's more that than Dwayne, right? Like, Jimmy is more of that stuff that the organization propagates.
Jimmy is much more Udonis than Jimmy and Udonis are like cut from the same cloth as
and Zo.
And Zo, yeah.
But Bam is closer to that than Dwayne.
Oh, yeah, no question. Bam is way. I mean, I always go back to when they were scouting him and they go, this guy's a little fucking crazy, huh? Like, yeah, that's what they were salivating at. I'm convinced that they know that they missed out on Draymond because they should have had him in the draft. And that's why they went so hard at Bam, because going into the draft, I actually thought Bam had a lot of Draymond in terms of like the intensity and the defensive IQ. You know, obviously he's even proven me wrong because he's by far past that now. But yeah, there's just, to Frankie's point, there are guys that you look at and that, you know, little crazy, like they were saying, is just welcome here and it thrives here.
It's nurtured. So Curtis's hero says Dwayne wasn't Hollywood at first. You're right, but it was kind of more of and then Little Spoon Leroy said Jimmy has work ethic. Dwayne had pure talent, which is also true because Jimmy really was a kind of scratcher and clawer when he got into the league. Dwayne walked in like a superstar. Which, you know, kind of to close this out, I was watching Dwayne had like shared some highlights on Instagram, and a couple things about that. Like, one, like, obviously he's one of the 15 greatest basketball players I've ever seen in my life. Like, he is just absolutely fucking transcendent. And I'm watching these clips, and I'm watching the way he's operating in no space, right? He's coming off a pick and roll. He's splitting it, and he's dunking with no space. Because the spacing on the floor was Udonis or Jermaine O'Neal in the dunker spot. And Dwayne slithering and dunking over dudes. And I'm like, there's legitimately not a dude in the league like that right now. Like, there just isn't. Like, if Dwayne Wade in his prime were playing right now, he would be the best basketball player in the league. If 2009 Dwayne Wade was here, he'd be the best basketball player in the league.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even think it's a question. Like, the way that he could just explode into speed for dunks, for defensive plays, the IQ. And again, he was playing in phone booth offense, right? It was Eric Spoelstra as a rookie coach without floor spacers.
And in the era of hand check, too. Let's not forget that halfway into his career, hand checks were taken out. So those first couple of years where he was relying purely on his athleticism and just bulldozing his way, somewhat similar to what we're seeing now with Jimmy Butler, just, you know, without that ferocity. that he brought with his speed.
Yeah.
But that you're absolutely right. He operated in the phone Dwayne booth.
Though. I mean 09. Because like even teams are dropping against Dwayne, right? They're not switching pick and rolls. Like they're just dropping and they're giving him the mid range and he's closing that gap so fast that it doesn't matter, right? So like you think you're giving him the mid range, but the second he turns the corner, he's one dribble and all of a sudden you're not in position to defend him. And then he's going up and he's getting dunked in front. Like it's just crazy. Like watching him play, like chat's agreeing. In 2009 he was the MVP of the league. We all know that. We know LeBron didn't deserve it. We know Chris Paul didn't deserve to be second in first place votes.
LeBron knows he didn't deserve
in voting. I think Dwayne got second most first place votes, but just finished third overall in the point system. Totally robbed by LeBron. LeBron has taken two things from Dwayne. LeBron took that MVP trophy and also took his finals MVP trophy in 2011 because that series, Dwayne absolutely put the fucking team on his back, carved up the Mavericks. Jack, I know you've talked a lot about how you've lived in Dallas. They must have hated him that series too.
They really hate Dwayne Wade.
He's probably enemy number one.
But like that's – I would hate Dwayne Wade too if I had to watch the 2006 finals, man. Like an experience
we don't
of pure
Dirk.
Joy for
Do we
me.
Hate Dirk? Do you hate Danny Green? Do you hate Gary Neal?
I love Dirk. But like Dirk did not do us the way Dwayne Wade did the Mavs in 2006. Like I really love.
He did have a great final.
Hold on, let's start this propaganda because I look at the stats all the goddamn time. Dwayne outplayed Dirk both series.
Absolutely, that's not even a question.
I think so. Yes,
not even a question.
But two games that Dirk stunk it up, Mavs won both those games. The closeout game, and I think it was game five.
Three.
Game three.
The Heat won game three.
That Mavs team, I think, is incredibly underrated as a cast. Like, I think Dirk is incredible. I think he does deserve credit for being a special talent, like one of the greatest power forwards ever,
absolutely.
Like one of the greatest international players ever. And like, he was great in 2011. I think Dwayne Wade outplayed him. And I think it goes incredibly underrated how good Jason Terry was. Tyson Chandler, incredible player. Like, I think it goes underrated how good that Mavs roster was because they immediately broke it up. Yeah, they immediately broke it up, and also they were kind of there were some older guys who kind of fell off pretty quickly, or like Tyson Chandler kind of became irrelevant really quickly. But like,
no, they traded.
Tyson Chandler was like a defensive player of the year. No, they got rid of him the next year. But I'm saying like he wasn't a relevant NBA force after that because
he was
incredible. Traded, and he was a defensive player of the year candidate. Like.
No, he won a defensive player of the year after he got traded.
He was traded. He was a Bobcat before this. He was traded for as a just as a throw in. I don't remember if it was. I think it was like a Dampier or something like that. Some bum. And the Bobcats like bought him out right away. They just took it for a pick, and then he turned into a good player. But the reason they fucking won wasn't because of Dirk. It was because the team shot 41% from three.
Yeah.
And they had nobody to guard them. And the Heat couldn't shoot anything because Mike Bibby and Mike Miller stuck it up. Mike Bibby, I hate him till this day. He's one of my least favorite players of all time because he stuck it up.
The worst waste of a standing ovation in American Airlines history. I am so furious that I got up and clapped for that shit.
You clapped for it? You were one of
I was in the moment. We had just got Mike Bibby. I was like, fuck yeah, welcome, buddy.
Look, Dwayne shot 54.
I wish I could take that back. I wish I could take it back, but the entire arena did.
I've never known anyone that admitted to this.
Wow. Unbelievable.
What do you got, Frank?
Dwayne shot 54% from the field that series.
Oh, but
Dirk shot 41.
So look at the numbers before Dwayne got hurt.
He shot 36 from three. It wasn't even like...
Brian Cardinal took Dwayne out. Remember, he had the hip check, and Dwayne's numbers plummeted after he got hurt because that's 51%. Fucking. With the last game and a half, he was hurt.
Deshaun Stevenson shot 56.5% from three.
Yo, Curtis Zero's making a great point in chat. Why did we cut Kendall Court's legend, Carlos Arroyo, who, by the way, would play at Olympic Park and knock a dude over and yell, "Get big." It legendary. Legendary
and
Kendall
and
moment.
We were all calling for him in the finals when Bibby was giving a shit.
Him and Chalmers. We wanted Chalmers.
Bad.
Chalmers started, I think, game six. It was a little too late.
Yeah, it was. Because Chalmers was actually playing well during the series.
Well, I was always furious that we had cut Patrick Beverley that year. I knew that he wasn't really going to be good for us, but we needed that defender at the point guard spot. And from everything we were hearing about him in training camp, he was a bulldog. So
I will say this.
That
he did not
me.
Play in the league for two more years. He was not ready. And I think that a lot of people bring that up. And I'll always say, like, they needed bodies then. They did not have time for a wait-and-see guy. They needed to fill up those. Unlike what they're doing now, they needed to use every single roster spot to see what they had. And Bev was just – he didn't play for 2 years. He didn't get a contract for 2 years.
The problem was there that they chose Beverly over Pittman there because they had fucking 16 centers on that team.
No, Dexter Pittman was later. Dexter Pittman was not the first year.
No, Dexter Pittman was that team.
Yeah.
Dexter Pittman was that first year.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah.
Because they still believe that they were going to need a traditional center.
Whoa, hold on. Wait a second. Tez Pickett said Eddie House was a dud here. Absolutely not. Eddie House has one of my favorite big three Heat moments ever. When he had a game winner over James Harden. There you go, Moose. Over James Harden, Russell Westbrook, and Kevin Durant. And in an era that had a 27-game win streak, that had the greatest sporting moments that this city will ever fucking feel. A top 15 moment or 10 moment is Eddie House hitting a game winner over three MVPs and then doing the big ball dance on the sideline. I'm sorry. You're wrong. You're wrong, chat. Chat, you're wrong. You're dead wrong. Dead wrong. All right, guys. So we're wrapping up here.
Getting mad all over this. They legitimately had six big men. Six
oh, no, yeah, it was,
don't even do it. You're just going to
hit none of them were good.
Counting Udonis or Bosch. That's not even big counting Z. Udonis or Bosch.
Big Z.
No, you had Big Zampier. You had McGlure. You had Joe Anthony.
Oh, Big Cat.
Joe Howard.
Big Cat.
You had Dexter Pittman. Why the fuck did we need so
many
big men?
How many bigs did we have? We had Big Cat.
We had like eight or nine. Half of our roster was dedicated to fucking big men when you're going to play LeBron and Bosh most of the minutes.
They needed to give Big Cat anyways. More minutes. I'm a Big Cat guy. When the Raptors were going through their playoff run and we got all the Big Cat memes as an assistant coach, that made me happy as a 2009 Heat, like, you know, Heat stan. I love that 2009.
It should have been Draymond Green, but I will never get over that, really.
Last question before we head out. Okay, I guess we'll combine them because KZ3925 gave two of them. How did Marc Gasol and Joakim Noah win Defensive Player of the Year when they're not great rim protectors? Because they prevented shots at the rim. They're just incredible IQ guys. Joakim was a switchy big, right? And just was anchoring the league's best defense. And same with Mark. Mark's a genius. Mark's a
Mark
fucking savant.
Mark didn't deserve it. Fuck Marc Gasol.
LeBron deserved it. But
Marc Gasol. No, fuck Marc Gasol. There's never been a possession that he scored on where he didn't travel. Fuck that loser. Powell will always be better than you, you little brother piece of shit.
Whoa. That was harsh. Got
David Fizdale fired.
He did.
Yeah.
Yeah. You he motherfucker.
And everything Fizdale said was right, too. Because Mark, he started making him shoot more threes, play big there. And what did that make Marc Gasol a championship big, man? So, yeah. What the fuck is he mad about?
Yeah,
maybe two. If he doesn't fucking evolve because David Fizdale said, hey, you should do this, and Marc Gasol throws a fucking hissy.
Spoelstra coaching tree's real. Dan Craig, you're next. Okay, last one. KZ3925 asks the second question. Will Bam be a better defensive player of the year? Will Bam be better defensively than Joakim and Gasol? Absolutely. Well, maybe not. Yeah, maybe no not Mark. Question. Maybe not Mark. I think that Bam has an upside and potential that is yet to be fulfilled.
You said maybe not Mark. I think Joakim's.
I think he will be. I think so. But you know, Mark's.
No, no.
Mark's
but you think Mark is a better defender than Joakim?
Yeah, for sure.
Really? I don't think so.
Yeah, for sure. No, he's brilliant. I mean, he's just
Joakim is too.
Joakim in his prime was.
No, yeah, but Mark's a different Joakim, gear.
Mark wasn't switching on guys. Joakim was way more versatile, and Joakim exactly.
That's fine.
His own inside.
It was a different era. There was less switching back then. I mean, even now, I mean,
they played during the same era. What are you talking about?
Simultaneously.
I know, but the Bulls did more switching than. And the Bulls didn't really switch that much. Joakim was not a switchy.
It was the same time.
They didn't drop. Yeah, what are you talking about?
It was a different era. They won Defensive Player of the Year like a year apart.
Like back to back.
I'm just trying to cape for my Raptors championship.
This is just your Raptor bias here.
Marc Gasol wasn't even the best defensive player on his own team.
Yes, he was.
Bullshit. Tony Allen.
Conley.
Tony Allen.
And yeah.
Tony Allen.
I forgot about Tony Allen.
Yeah. Tony Allen did nothing else and was still a high quality NBA starting player because he was a dog, man.
Marc Gasol wasn't even first team all defense that year.
Oh, that's right. I remember that. I actually remember that controversy. That was funny.
No, but to answer the question, I don't think I think Bam might be a better individual defender than them. I don't know about team defender, because one of the things that really highlighted those guys is that they got to play with great defenders as well. You had Joakim.
Well, not Joakim.
Taj Gibson. Joakim played with Taj Gibson and the whole thing. What do you mean?
Yeah. Okay. Uncle Lou. I'll allow it.
Yeah. This guy. And Tim Thibodeau was a great defensive coach.
I hate that Bulls team. I don't want to give them any credit. Fuck that Bulls team.
But they were incredibly defensive. Yeah. They were superior defensive team.
Heat in five. Fuck them. Heat in five.